Welcome. You're listening to Three Bothered Fathers, where we talk about what it is to be a father in today's society. Please listen, like, and share. God bless.
Well, hello, 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 hello. It's good to be with you again. This is John Suits. Is with me always as Drew Walden and Jared Suits. This is Three Bothered Fathers, your podcast about fatherhood, faith, family, friction, food. I don't know any other. Oh, I know plenty of other F words, but one we can't.
Fun.
There's another one we can't use because of the rating of our podcast. But we're glad to be with you. Hope you've had a good week. And going to launch right in, just see how these losers are doing. Drew, Jared, how was your week?
Oh, it was just another old week. Just one week after the last week. Just another week. How about you, Jared?
It was pretty good. I had a colonoscopy. Now, I think I mentioned that last time that I was preparing for one, but I finally had it. And have you guys ever had one?
Nope.
I'm afraid not. Yeah.
Well, most men are supposed to have it by the age of 50, but I'm only 37, and I was just itching to get it done. it was a weird experience. Not the fact that, you know, your anal canal is being explored by a camera and a crew of 12. That's a whole nother thing, but it's
that was Drew's college.
Just need to check up in your butthole. Just need to check up in your butthole.
It's amazing how many times our buttholes are references on this podcast, but
that's true. Drew's is so well lubed from his bidet. That camera, they could fly a drone up his.
I'm not going to deny it's been done before.
Here, help us. Anywho, I had the whole thing that there's two things to it. First thing is this is a prep, and the prep is where you drink this really clear liquid that's going to clear you out. And it was kind of a weird feeling.
Was it all sport from the 90s?
Yeah, that's a carbonated beverage. No, it was just gasoline. But
no. You do live in Cleveland, Tennessee.
Hey, drink this, boy. it was crazy, man. I was at 6 o'clock. The family was gone. I poured this liquid. I hadn't eaten in since the lunch the day before, and because you couldn't eat but you drink. That's about it. But I just chug this drink, and you just sit there, and you're just, it's like a ticking time bomb. You're just waiting for it to hit. And it was funny, 30, 45 minutes went by and I didn't feel anything. I was like, is this stuff even working? I got nervous. And I sent a message to my wife, this stuff isn't working. And literally 5 minutes after that, all of a sudden, I felt my stomach just crawl out and go, it's time. And I ran to that bathroom, and by gosh, I was in there for hours. And
oh, gosh.
Everything that I've ever eaten came out. The biscuits and gravy my mom used to feed us growing up was coming out.
Pepperoni Hot Pockets from college.
Oh, man. Hot Pockets. I ain't had a Hot Pocket in a minute.
Yeah. Can we get a sponsorship from them? That'd be great.
Hot Pocket. I love Hot Diarrhea Pockets. Pocket.
I swear, they have that taco Hot Pocket. It's the best Hot Pocket there ever was.
I don't think so. I don't think there's a good Hot Pocket. But yeah, everything came out, even a condom filled with cocaine that it once had. I was like, that wasn't even mine. But
forgot it was a drug mule.
forgot about the late night.
Oh, they're going to break my legs.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah, it all came out. And then it slowly stopped about midnight. And I passed out and I had to get up at 4 o'clock to take another batch.
Ugh.
And to do it all over again. And I was so scared going to the hospital that morning because I was like, I'm going to poop in my pants. I'm like, I'm going to need to wear it. And they even say it in the literature, if you feel like you're going to keep pooping, wear a diaper.
Oof.
Good God. But I made it to the hospital, and then once I got there, I did it. But yeah. And then the craziest thing is the nurse I had, she was like, I don't know, Eastern European. And so she walks in. She's got the heavy Eastern European accent, and she's really aggressive and mean with me. She's like, I need your vein. And I go, okay. And she grabs my hand and keeps stabbing me, and she can't find a vein. She's yelling at me. You're nervous. I'm like, yes. So finally she sticks me where like meth heads stick their arms, and blood squirts all over her, and she's like, yeah. Oh my gosh. And then I go back in there, and they do their business. But on honestly, it was a good experience in the sense that, in all seriousness, I hadn't really told anybody this, not even my wife, until literally the morning of, that the reason I was doing this, there were some warning signs that I was showing that it could have been something more serious. It could have been cancer. It could have been pre-cancer stuff. It could have been some internal other issues. And I was scared. I won't lie. I like to joke around and talk big and bad, but honestly, for 2 weeks, I was scared to death, and I kept thinking about, you know, the fact that I'd be dead. There was a picture of me hanging in the kitchen, and I was eating, and it fell off the day before, and or 2 days before, 3 days, whenever that week, and I thought that was God's sign that I'm leaving the house.
Gosh,
but I was nervous. I mean, the nurse was right. She kept saying, like, my heart, like, I have a really good pulse, and I mean, my blood pressure is usually perfect, my heart rate is usually perfect, and my heart rate was just off the chart that day. My blood pressure was running low. I mean, I was just I was scared, and but glory to God, you know, I prayed beforehand, like, God, if there's an issue, heal it. And I really believe that if there was anything, I know God to take care of it. And so, but it was all good. I'm all in the clear. I don't have to have another one until I'm 50, unless I have something else crazy happen or ever, you know, stick a bag of cocaine in my butt. But but yeah, I don't know. Anxiety is just one of those things that that men, I think, sometimes don't talk about. I know recently The Rock came out and talked about his battle with depression, and, you know, big tough guy. And I don't know. I don't know, guys. Is that something maybe we want to chat about tonight? It's kind of an awkward thing, and something that doesn't seem manly. Like, oh, you know, we talked about anger once before, and that seems like a man thing. But the other A word, anxiety. I don't know, John. What are you thinking?
That's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, it is funny the way you said that kind of resonated with me. I asked that we ought to just go there. Why not go there? We were going to talk about sex on the beach, but I guess this is the better topic. So.
Yeah, because none of us have had either.
I've had sex with a beach, but that's another awkward story.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, but it, no. Oh, that sounds like that's a sinister laugh. But no, I think it's, the way you said it was very telltale, right? There are acceptable emotions for men to have. Anger-tinged joy, anger-tinged happiness. But when it comes to this idea of depression and anxiety, I guess my first question is, why do you think men are so hesitant to talk about these issues? Because let's just be real, when a guy like The Rock is coming out, you know, and others who have talked about their battle, professional athletes, and we'll get into that, I suppose. But, you know, it seems like once you really get down to it, a lot of men are facing this issue, but nobody's wanting to talk about it. So, I mean, is this an issue of male pride or sexism? I mean, what is this? Why do men not want to talk about this?
I don't know. I think part of it is men, like you said, John, men sort of have to keep this veneer that they got everything under control. And that was part of my issue, is I thought, as the dad, as the husband, as a man in the house, but I thought, you know, my job was to just march right along and play it cool, that, hey, everything's okay, I got this, not a big deal. But deep down, I was just so tormented by it, and it probably would have been helpful to talk about it. I don't know about you all, but that wasn't the first time I struggled with anxiety. Am I the only one in among the three of us that struggled with it?
Yes, I'm perfect. I've never had a panic attack or anything.
I'm what they call a macho man. No.
Yeah,
man.
I'm not.
Anxiety is. Ugh. I have bad anxiety. I don't know about y'all, but I have lots of anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm right there with you. And I mean, yeah, I run. Oh my gosh, I could fill, you know, this podcast or any other with plenty of stories of freakouts and, you know,
when you guys are going through it, you may not feel comfortable sharing, but if you have an example of something like that, but also, did you ever talk to other people about it? Did you ever share it with it? Is it something that only you sort of keep within you?
I've talked to my wife about my anxiety.
I think Drew has anxiety right now.
That one just trailed off. I've had to. Here's what I would say in my own experience. I think I was having anxiety and depression issues before I could even name what they were. You know, and this is what I found with a lot of guys that I've actually ended up talking to is, you know, and I think it goes down to the issue of like acceptable emotions and unacceptable emotions. It's very, very difficult to admit you're having a panic attack or an anxiety issue or you're running anxious or whatever it is, because I think that's honestly still perceived as a women are emotional, but men are supposed to be stoic and, you know, again, the, you know, almost Spartan, like the acceptable emotion is anger or, you know, aggression. For me, I've always been kind of anxious. I just didn't know until after college, like, oh, okay. Like there's a name for this, like anxiety disorder or clinical depression or, you know, for sure. And I have talked to people. I've talked to, I think it is good to talk to your wife for sure. And when you can kind of admit like, hey, I've been having anxiety issues, then she'll go, oh, that's why you've been such a bastard the past year, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a good point, because I think a lot of times for men, you know, it's interesting. We talk about these different health issues, you know, for example, like for heart issues exhibit different warning signs in women than it does for men. And I think anxiety issues also and other health issues have different exhibiting factors for women and than it does for men. And I think a lot of times when anxiety is mentioned, it's usually because men have a sense of shame or guilt about it. They, I think I'll be honest, and I hope Drew, or you are not mad at me for saying this, but I think even bringing this conversation up is probably a little uncomfortable for not just me, but I think for both of you, because it is a sense of. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think it exhibits in a different sort of way. And so what do you guys think sort of anxiety can kind of look like in men? We sometimes think of anxiety as like some cloudy black, you know, it's a cloudy day and the rain is coming down and there's a depressed person in front of a window wearing all black and petting a cat and drinking a hot cup of tea and just sitting there crying, looking at the sky. I mean, that's sort of our picture, or they're in the bed and their head is covered up and they're, you know, they're hugging a pillow and sobbing. That's sort of what the world thinks. Oh, when we hear the word anxiety, but I don't think it necessarily manifests itself that way in men.
No, yeah.
Mine's always been, my anxiety is like a physical feeling. Like I feel like I'm about to die. It's, I don't know, man. I was driving through the first time I ever had a panic attack. I was driving through Washington, D.C. on my way to Delaware, traffic. I guess the traffic just got to me, but it literally felt like something had exploded inside of my stomach, and that death was just flowing through my veins. It was the strangest feeling I'd ever felt.
That condom with cocaine busted.
Yeah, exactly. It's what it felt like, this just like ice. I was on the phone with my mother when it happened. I said, and I told her, and y'all will probably remember this. I told her, I said, something has just burst inside of me. I'm calling 911. I hung up on my mother and I called 911, pulled over on the side of the road. An ambulance came and got me and took me to the hospital where they determined that nothing at all was wrong with me.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm in the hospital, IV in, you know, I literally thought I was dying. I literally thought I was on the side of the road dying. And it was just anxiety. I was just the traffic. Just my nerves were just shot, I guess. I don't really know what happened.
Man, it's tough. I mean, I think I've been there. I mean, yeah. I mean, and you're talking about other exhibiting factors here. And I mean, I've had what Drew has experienced, that sort of intense, but then there's this sort of slow nagging thing, you know, you're irritable. I mean, irritability, I think, for guys is, if I had to guess what a lot of guys struggle with when it comes to, it's the irritability, the, I can't tell you what's on my mind. I've got to remain tough. And just like, it's not even just, I can't tell you. I really do think, I mean, this is another issue, but, and as men, we have to admit that most of us have such low emotional intelligence, which is a real thing. You can look it up, Google emotional intelligence, and the inability to even describe what's actually happening. Whereas women have been taught to talk about these things and, they're sort of acceptable language, but, to really even have the kind of, the ability to talk about why are you so irritable? You know, why are you so edgy? I mean, those are words we'll hear. Well, he's kind of edgy today. Well, maybe he's suffering from some anxiety issues,
Think about how much you've heard of this spoken of in your household growing up. My dad never talked about this.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. You
know, it was never a thing. At least for me growing up.
I think for most guys, man, I think me and Jared grew up in the same house.
Sort of.
Same dad, different mom, but another story. No.
But they all live together.
Yeah, it's all good. You'll see the forthcoming TLC special.
Yeah, we're cousins.
Cousin brother.
I wonder if my father dealt with it or if. Maybe the world has just changed to such a point where now we struggle with this.
No, the reason I do not think it's something that's just our culture, I think anxiety and stress is increasing our culture because the statistics show us that teenagers or children struggle with it because of just access to just, more information, more, we've talked about this before, but I don't think it's any coincidence that in the scriptures, there's a phrase, be anxious for nothing. So when you think about that phrase, that whole concept of anxiety, it's obvious anxiety has been with us for a long time. And I think with men, over the generations though, and I think part of it is the further we get away from God, that whole reason I was scared and so anxious about my colonoscopy, because truthfully, I wasn't really praying about it. In a way I should have been. I had not turned over that anxiety to God. And so I was living a life that I was living in that moment of just dwelling in my own awareness of what was happening. And the way I manifested it was not necessarily, I wasn't irritable. I was closed off. I was just quiet. That's sort of how I manifest. I just kind of was disengaging. But I don't know. I don't think it's something that, our fathers didn't struggle with, because they were men in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, whatever. I think it's just something that, they probably didn't talk to their wives about either, or as John said, they didn't know what was going on. They just thought they were just anxious and irritable and
yeah,
just pissy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just, I think that's it is, you know, I think there's an aware, coming to the awareness of what's going on. And I mean, I think, you know, as we kind of round the corner and think about, you know, think about another angle on this issue is, you know, how do we, maybe the best way to ask this question is, you know, how do we begin to get to the, I mean, before we even get to the root of the issue, which is so complicated and beyond our scope, because none of us are professional psychologists, but how do we even begin to knock down the walls that prevent us from talking about this? I mean, Drew, you're saying you never talked with it, your dad. I mean, I remember having some conversations with my dad about things like, you know, boy, I'm kind of, you know, edgy or about this or anxious about this, but to really kind of name it as I'm suffering from some anxiety. How do we get to where we can talk about this? I mean, I guess what we should say, first of all, and this is always important, if your anxiety and depression is debilitating, keeping you from work, you've moved beyond, you know, you probably should seek professional help. And so if you are listening and that's you, this podcast is probably not enough to diagnose and cure you. Sorry if you were hoping for that.
If you think this podcast is going to help you, you obviously need to seek counseling.
Yeah, but I do think, yeah, seek some professional help. But if you're in the boat of, man, I'm struggling with this, or I'm fixating on things. It would have been good for you, Jared, to be able to break the ice and have this conversation with somebody. And, how do we help men in our lives do that? I mean, do we become vulnerable first, you know, in our friendships and admit this, or do we just keep hiding it?
Well, I think and I mentioned a second ago, the first mistake I made was not turning it over to God soon enough. I did that morning and that day, but I think I got to the point I was just praying in sort of anxiousness itself and desperation. And I think the first person, or the first thing we do as far as it beginning to sort of be vulnerable is being vulnerable with God. And I think that's our first step as men. I don't, you know, because I'm not big in the, you know, sitting down eating lunch with a bunch of dudes and we're sitting there laughing and all of a sudden, like, you know, we're making fun of the taco truck we're eating at, and because it's got a flat tire and da 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 da, and all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, that's great. By the way, I cried myself to sleep last night.
Let us all sing Kumbaya together.
And I don't think that's necessarily the answer. I think the first step in this is, you know, unless if you are at a place where, like John mentioned, you do, you know, you're really being hurt by this at the point where you need counseling, that yes, that is an immediate need. But if you're sort of where I think I was and still am sometimes, is I think I just need to have a stronger and more open relationship with God. Because if I can open myself up to God, I think people in my life will begin to open up that I can begin to talk to about these issues with at the same time. But I have to get comfortable enough to talk to God about it first and pray about it and have ongoing discussions with God and prayer and reading scriptures and sort of spending those quiet moments with God. And then I think everything else begins to sort of, you know, open itself up.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's good. I mean, yeah, I think, if you can't be honest with yourself in front of God in prayer, I mean, you shouldn't even talk to other people about it. It would almost be like, what's the point, I guess. I think there's some helpful things. I mean, some certain scriptures come to mind. Search me, O God, and see if there's any wicked way within me. Things like that. I mean, in the Orthodox tradition, I mean, this is a whole another podcast, and I could refer, if you're interested in doing more deep reading on this, my priest, Father Stephen Freeman, has written a lot on anxiety and shame and depression, with his own, you know, stories mixed in, and actually lots of good clinical research, but, you know, this idea, this prayer for mercy, Lord, have mercy upon me, Lord, have mercy upon me, and being honest with God, you know, and wow, yeah, I think that's a good point, Jared, that as we open up ourselves to God, the Lord will provide healthy outlets. You know, hopefully you're a part of a church where there is pastoral staff that you feel comfortable with to talk to and as you enter into relationship with people. And you know, I think Jared's point is right. You don't want to go gushing around about these things. But yeah, no, that, I mean, I think that's good. I mean, that has to be the first step. You know, and really, that's not just a first step, right? That's a, I mean, in our battle with this, in our struggle against this, I mean, what are some good, have you guys had some success with some rhythms, some prayer rhythm or scripture reading, or have you found, I mean, even physiological tips and tools that have helped you with anxiety and depression?
One thing that I read about that helps with as far as anxiety goes is you have to look at yourself in the bigger picture of the world and realize that, you know, maybe what's happening right now isn't as bad as it could be. That's always helped me. It could be worse.
Yeah, it could be Jared having to crap my pants out.
Yeah, I don't know. I always find comfort in my wife. I tell my wife pretty much everything. She's my best friend. She's my go-to person, I guess. I don't know. Does that make me stupid?
Yeah, how dare you? How dare you talk to your wife?
My wife is basically a servant. So no, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I think that's good. English.
I talk to her about everything. I mean, there's been times I'll be talking to her and be crying like a little baby. I hate to even admit this, but I'd just be laying in bed just sobbing because whatever. And I feel like a complete idiot, but I guess at the end of it, I feel better.
I think that's as you say it, we'll call you out on it. That's you're feeling a sense of shame, but yeah. Why are you feeling shame?
Because a man's not supposed to do that.
Exactly. It goes back to that first initial point in all this. And I think that all the billions of guys that need to be listening to this are in your same boat. I think most guys at some point in their marriage have had moments like that, whether they care to admit it or not. If they haven't had those moments, it's because they're holding back something. Because this opens a whole nother conversation for another time about, you know, I think a lot of times we get in trouble with our spouses, our relationship with our spouses, because we hold back a piece of who we are, because we have this false veneer that we're trying to exhibit to them and our families. And if we want to be a good dad and we want to be a good husband, we're going to have to be vulnerable and with our wives, and we're going to have to be okay to let them in on our world, our whole world. Because if you start to close them out in little parts of your world, you run the risk of closing them out in larger parts of the world, to the point that maybe you begin to develop an unhealthy marriage. And, you know, and all our wives will respond differently, but we are being true to truly loving them by entrusting them with who we are. And I think that gives them the same opportunity to do that as well. Because I know women are also hold back because they feel like their husbands, you know, can't handle it, or they don't want to hear it, or they blah, 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 blah. And at the same time, it allows for women with their husbands to do the same thing. And then you're able to sort of develop a more stronger bond. You know, and we all know how crying on the bed ends. Well, popsicles.
You say that, but I mean, I truly do, you know, outside of prayer, I do seek comfort in my wife. I mean, that is my, you know, she's my, outside of God, she is my earthly comforter, if that makes sense. I mean, that's my go-to place, you know. In her, I find peace. And is that weird?
No, I think that's
like talking to her is like putting on a warm blanket.
Oh man,
my gosh, you should write poetry. Oh, you wife, you are like a warm blanket. You're not the only one that does that.
No, and that's the thing. It's like a lot of guys are going to be listening. I'm glad. Listen, I've been there. I mean, my goodness, this is the whole purpose behind while we're talking about this is to really get to the root and be honest and be like, listen, you should be talking to your wife. If you're not talking to your wife about these issues, you're probably making a huge mistake. Because you're depriving yourself of something, you know, like, I think that's a great practical tip, Drew. Like, you find comfort in talking these things out with your wife. And all of us have different, every person's situation is unique. And even talking it out with your wife, I mean, some people are going to say, well, I do that already. Well, good. And yeah, I still struggle with these issues. Well, that's okay. There are other things, you know, that are, I think that are tied up with that, right? I mean, one of the things I could say, honestly, as a practical tip is exercise. I mean, you don't have to be an idiot you could be an idiot and still know how beneficial physical exercise is to depression and anxiety, getting outside.
And especially for depression. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and being able to work off that stuff and to be able, you know, Drew referenced in a much earlier podcast, getting out there with an axe and chopping down a tree. Well, get out there, chop out a, I mean, honestly, I really, that in my own struggle, and that's where, like, to get personal, like Drew, you know, the times I've struggled and I go to my wife and she's so good to push me out of myself. And that's really, I think in a lot of this, what it kind of boils down to from Jared's thoughts about talking to God and Drew's thoughts about talking with your wife and me talking about getting out there and exercising. You got to get outside of yourself. There's such a danger, you know, Jared referenced earlier, he was stuck inside of his mind. You know, he was just kind of withdrawn. Well, there's a danger in revolving this all around yourself.
You have to realize that you're not alone, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
The moment that you think you're alone in this, it starts going the other way. You have to realize that people are there for you. People love you. God loves you. People are walking down the same path alongside of you. You just might not realize it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really good. I mean, and getting over the male shame of this is not an acceptable man behavior. Well, that's kind of outside of your control. So if you're listening to this still feeling, well, you know, I can push through and I can grit my teeth and, you know, dig in my heels and fight this. Well, yeah, you probably are going to lose. No, I think wrapping it up, there's more we could say about this, but if we kind of wanted to hit the highlights again, I would say, you know, listen, depression, anxiety, they're not just issues that women face. Men face it. It's likely that your dad faced it, your brothers faced it, your coworkers face it. It's best to get honest with God first and with yourself and then with your wife. Think practical about these things. Don't get stuck in the self-referential loop. Get outside of yourself, whether it be through prayer, through exercise, through a combination of all that. And get over the male shame. There's nothing to be embarrassed by. This is a real struggle. It's a part of living in the world we live in the fallen flesh we live in. And again, we reiterate, if this is becoming crippling to the point of inoperability in your life, please seek professional help. There are people who are willing to help you, your medical doctor, so on and so forth. And this is good. I think this is good for us to be honest with each other and with our listeners. We hope that it's helped you out in some fashion. Any closing thoughts, Drew or Jared?
Yeah, just remember you're not alone. Just, I struggle with it. Y'all too struggle with it. A lot of people struggle with this. So you're not alone. We're all in this together, right?
Yeah, that's right. And if you need help, call Drew's wife. She sounds like she's really good.
Sounds like a great blanket.
she's quite warm, I will say.
Oh, anything else, Jaren?
No, I think it was a good sum up. If you do want to, want more information about it, there are some good places to go. John mentioned his priest, Father Stephen. Was it, who is it?
Father Stephen Freeman.
Yeah, he's a great resource on these issues, and so I would just Google his name, and he's got a blog and tons of wealth of information. I'm not an Orthodox Christian, but I found his resources on guilt, shame, anxiety are just a great topic. So check those out.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, we didn't even get into the physiological side of things, and that's beyond our scope. But if you have to get on medication to function, I will say this in closing: don't feel shame. You're not alone. Don't feel the shame. This is why we're talking about it, right? And we're happy that you've been listening. Like us on Facebook. We have a Twitter, whatever you call a Twitter account, handle, whatever. I think we have 2 followers.
Tweeter.
you could be a tweeter with us. And this is, we really appreciate you listening. All we ask, as always, at the end of every episode, if you like what we're doing, just share it. Share it. Share it with a friend. Share it with an enemy. I guess if you have one of those. And we sure appreciate you listening. We're praying for all 4 of you out there. Hi, Drew's mom. And we look forward to next week.
Love you. Love you all. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week when we continue the conversation on being a father in today's world. Again, this is 3 Bothered Fathers. Thanks for listening.